Welcome back. I think the episode 316, 316. Joe, are you in mourning this morning? You're the death of your senator, Dianne Feinstein, a trailblazing senator. She's a
We're
I read some different articles and all of them used the word trailblazer.
right. That's the meme. They don't mention the trail that's being blazed as genocide of Heritage America, but that is what she was. She was certainly a trailblazer in all of those ways. There's just nothing good that can be said about this person. She could never be elected in a, in a world where there was real human empathy, because she was just the coldest, most evil kind of image and manifestation imaginable. You know what I mean? She's just, I mean, how could someone like that be a politician? But she was just, like Kamala Harris in California, the political process is really, it's just one. There's a facade of democracy, and then people are inserted into these places, and they last forever. There can
Oh,
never be.
incidentally, Gavin Newsom has promised that a black woman will fill her seat.
No doubt,
No
no doubt.
specific black woman as of yet, but just whatever, whoever it is, it has to be a black woman. So
Right.
there's
So
meritocracy
there's meritocracy, and by
for
the way, the. You know meritocracies have the advantage of, competent people with skills, get to do the stuff that you need to have done to have a civilization that functions. And last week they put out the information that in the last year the S&P hiring really had been affected by the BLM riots and the influence. The only 6% of the hires of the last 12 months were white people. 6%, 94% were people of color. So these are all basically affirmative action hires. I
Is
mean,
this an
I
example of
know,
white supremacy?
white supremacy, right? I know that you have really talented individuals in that cohort, but when you have, remember, in every sort of criteria, white people would certainly be in the top 50%. So when you're only at 6% hiring as a conglomerate, the other 94% is not going to be,
Well,
what.
especially when you're like 62% of the population.
Yeah. So you see what I mean? So this is really, this is what
I mean,
the
you're
opposite.
excluding a lot of talent over the fetish of what we're told is just mere skin color.
Right. And
I
then
thought it doesn't
remember,
matter. I
so
thought we
it's,
all bleed red, right? So it doesn't
yeah,
matter.
I mean, this is, yeah, we do, so this is financial, aid to minorities in a way, but the problem here is that it just you have to think out 10 years as to where the economy is going to be with this kind of middle management and the hirees, the ones that really they're in that category there of the 94% that were hired. There has to be a lot of them that really shouldn't have been, that really can't really function that well in their jobs. So this is all going to be reflected in our economy, and so down we go straight
Well,
into the.
didn't South Africa implement a similar policy in the after apartheid collapse, where they had of course
Yeah,
a
of course,
quota?
and but
What were the results?
Tim, we have a we I mean we the results were catastrophic. However, we have a much more, well, no, not more vivid, but closer to home example. Think of all of the US cities that have self-esteem black mayors. All right? I mean, this, they have the this idea that it's a really good idea to just put people into these offices, like in San Francisco, for example. I mean, that's a city that doesn't have a black majority, but it has a black mayor
London
who,
breed, I think, yeah.
yeah, breed. And she's the one who said that, well, all the businesses are closed. That's true, but we have to not worry about that, but think about the people who will be filling them in the future.
Well, didn't one of your family members recently visit the city by the bay?
Not my family, but I have very good information coming from that region, and I know just event after event of violence. And I mean,
By the way, this
breaking.
is Dianne Feinstein, San Francisco. She,
Right, breaking
I
the
think her
guard.
political ascendancy was through San Francisco politics.
Yeah, and that's right. I mean, there's the level of sort of street kind of break-in crimes has really made the place uninhabitable. Retail is just gone. The episode that I was talking about before we started was a Whole Foods, middle class person was there just trying to get food, and a crazy person, I would characterize him, gentleman, man of color. They tried to stop him from just stealing things, and he took a metal pipe he had and started breaking glass bottles as a way of getting, people to not restrain him. And the individual that I got the story from just ran out of the store. And I mean, what do you do at that point? You just try to find a store someplace else that doesn't have a violent person, in action. But the city is really, I mean, it's moving to uninhabitableness, it seems to me, pretty quickly. And again, when you look at the hiring, Tim, that is really kind of ludicrous at this point, with only 6% of the whole year of S&P hires being white. Aren't these like businesses just kind of all microcosms of San Francisco? I mean, they're all basically moving toward a, maybe perhaps not just systemic violence, but systemic incompetence that makes them uninhabitable in the sense that they can't, habitate in a competitive world. They're certainly not going to be able to compete against, Japanese and Chinese and in other kinds of businesses. And as we mentioned, and this is a point you made a long time ago, and I thought it was so true. Really, what this all is, it's the end of street retail, which had all of the cultural and political benefits, right, to having people in human contact. And it's a replacement by the online oligarch. You don't want, you can't go to the Whole Foods and buy stores. You just got to use Amazon. And of course, that means that it's all be able to be controlled. You're in a
Isn't
system.
Whole Foods owned by Amazon anyway?
Right, it is, as a matter of fact.
They
It's
bought it out. Yeah, they bought it
right. They
out.
brought it
Yeah.
out. So they got both sides of the street,
They
but
were
it's
given
again.
like largesse of black budget money from the CIA to buy up these things. That's
Yeah,
basically
of
how
course.
these corporations
Remember,
function.
this
Yeah.
was a company that
Like
didn't
BlackRock. Yeah.
never made any money
Yeah.
until very recently. So of course, it was all just credit that was created because of the social credit score of the owner of the company, and it was very high, I guess.
Yeah.
So they let him own everything. But at the end of this, you're just going to be having an online world where you order your food online, your money is handled online, and if you are bad, meaning to say if you visited websites that they don't like, well, then they reduce your food.
Incidentally, this is kind of a thing that I've noticed is, and this may not mean anything, I just think that I observed is, Amazon has these stores, retail stores you can go to,
Yeah.
and they're dedicated Amazon stores. And I visited one a couple of times, and the feeling that I get, the aesthetic is kind of brutal and cold. And whereas in the past, if you walk into a grocery store, particularly the higher end ones, it's kind of accommodating and friendly looking, and makes you want to stick around for a while.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, it's almost like they're trying to, again, not make the retail experience an enjoyable experience. And it's almost like it's the complete opposite. Now, I don't know if that's done intentionally or not, but that's the impression I get. Just the whole
Oh,
aesthetic experience.
100%. Tim, you are so right. I've been to a couple of them, and they all have the aesthetic of a concentration camp.
Yes.
Concrete
By the way,
floors.
and with no swimming pool
Right. Right.
or
And no
orchestra.
gas chamber. But they are designed, in my opinion, to just remind people that they don't want you to get out of your houses to order things. Unpleasant experience. Stay inside, get your vaccination, and just buy things online, which of course is, if people would just sit back and think about it, is a step to extinction, right? Because you don't really have any kind of a future as a human being if this is what you accept as your reality.
With retail, I ran into this thing, I guess, a new term. We learn these words, add them to my vocabulary. It's called boosting.
Oh yeah, boosting.
Boosting. Now, this isn't anything new. It's called stealing, then selling these things illegally, fencing. So
Yeah,
it's
boosting.
like, apparently, there's this there was a tweet. I guess they still call them tweets, right? Or posting at X, Twitter X. I think it was Twitter X. Yeah, where I've been boosting since 17. Basically, this young lady claims she's
Yes,
been
people.
stealing, boasting that she's boosting. Bought my own suite for my stuff and my mom and a house. I put myself in an apartment before I hit 18. I love it. I never have been caught. Thank you, Lord. You can't tell none wrong with it. IDCCCC, whatever that means.
That's the famous Meatball. That her name, her moniker is Meatball, and she's the one who
Well, this one
organized.
isn't. This one is Duh Celebrity.
I think that's actually Meatball. I'm pretty
Well,
sure.
if that sucks, the meatballs looks like Aunt Jemima. This one is a skinny girl. She's
Okay, sorry,
holding her baby. But yeah, but
sorry, my mistake. Yeah.
so and of course, then this you have that posting, the boasting of the boost. Of course, shoplifting, just taking an item from the store and using it for yourself. Boosting is when you steal something and you resell it. And this is where, obviously, from what I understand, a lot of warehouses that collect the stuff and sell it on the street, sell it back to other retailers. And also, of course, eBay and Amazon apparently have been used to liquidate these things. So they're involved in an interstate, shoplifting, stealing conspiracy that you think the FBI would be interested in investigating. But
Well,
again,
I interject particularly because this is obviously unfair competition. In other
yes.
words, Amazon is destroying the retail business.
They're getting a cut of whatever
That has
sold.
been right. They are just getting a cut, and but at, so they're making money on the sale of the item, but they're also destroying the competition.
Yes.
So I would say RICO might be applied here, and you could look at this as organized crime against the retail. I mean, the retail.
I thought RICO was passed to combat election deniers back in 1969, but then wasn't
RICO?
it?
Yeah. Holocaust deniers but and organized crime. Just
Yeah.
the idea that you have to have a communication that is, kind of secret in order to achieve the crime. But if
Well,
you
they
can,
call
like,
it organized retail theft. ORT now is out there. Of course, this is something that costs $100 billion a year estimated.
yeah.
And of course, the average family pays, I think, an additional $500 a year in prices, higher prices because of this. And it's not getting much attention from the feds.
Well, but also think of, like, the moral perspective of the booster. That woman, I believe it's a woman who made the tweet. She There's no contrition. There's no idea that this could lead to something bad for culture or society. She's bragging and happy and benefiting, and that means that her whole culture, the culture she lives in, is accepting of this. So you're not really talking even about, an organized crime. You're talking about an organized culture of crime. I mean, that person could not have that attitude so publicly, making public tweets, if there was friends who were in opposition to it, or parents, or, I mean, any kind of influence in her life that was saying, this is wrong. She doesn't have that. She does not have that. She couldn't make that. So what you're dealing with is a revelation of culture there. That
And here, yeah,
that's
and
the
another
issue.
thing is platforms like Twitter X and other social media platforms were organized and promote these smash and grab operations, which are what people say are increasingly looked organized or coordinated at the very least. But there's no attempt by these platforms to deplatform the people involved in it. It's very traceable, by the way. Law enforcement could easily track down who is doing this and arrest them. This young lady should be
Traceable.
arrested.
I mean,
But
Tim.
at the same time, if you're a so-called white nationalist or have ideas that the ADL doesn't like, these same platforms will not only prevent you from organizing a conference, promoting your ideas, or even fundraising, because you won't be able to raise funds through crowdfunding or credit card payments. They're very efficient at doing that, but they can't invest. There's no way you can investigate this and track down who's stealing it, then who's selling it, and what platform is permitting to sell it, because that would indict eBay and Amazon, which is then connected, to the oligarchs and
Right.
also to the deep
And
state. So.
notice that gee, it must be impossible to be able to trace this, because the people who are using the platform are doing it to create mobs, right?
Yeah.
So So it is done to be public disclosure of, a criminal event. And yet, even though that is the case, that somehow the authorities can never quite find out, I mean, all they would have to do is show up at the public events that the boosters are bragging about and maybe arrest a few people. But that's not happening. That is not happening, man. I mean, a few cities are kind of staggering toward the realization that they have to try something, but I don't see that in San Francisco. What my experience is, and the people that I know that are there, is that it's just the opposite, that they're going more in the direction of protection of the criminals, more in the protection of the incarcerated, the released criminal class that's now predating, on all of the middle class existence. And at the same time, they are ratcheting up the hate laws, hate speech, white nationalism, criticism. So it's the it's we are really in need of resegregation. Anyone who is inside these areas, the Soros-funded DA zones, we've said 100 times, I just don't know how they can, if they have a family, for heaven's sakes, they have to get out. I have a friend who is in Chicago, lives in Chicago, we're out in the suburbs. Kid plays football. It's I mean, fairly well off individual. So I haven't actually been to his residence or the high school, but I heard about the event. Kids, they were having football practice, and a gang gun battle broke out in the area adjacent to the football field. So this was last week, the same week where the violent event I had described occurred. So more and more of these things are becoming just part of the consciousness of heritage America, dog whistle for, white Americans. We're just seeing these things which weren't in our life, right, in the 50s, 60s, 70s. These were not events in the areas we live. Now they are becoming our life. This is just
Well, it's only fair that white people feel have the fear that black people fear when they're on the street. That's the rationale. There's no reflection at who's shooting whom and for what. It's basically it's white people are
Yeah, and
privileged.
but that's not exactly progress, right? In other words, to take the most disadvantaged and suffering group and make that the standard for everyone, didn't we go in the wrong direction?
Well, it's a great leveling, but the idea is, the
Well, I
attitude
mean, weren't
is,
we supposed to go the other way and try to make those
well,
people turn
the
into
attitude is, when they you hear it in the headlines, that a neighborhood that's plagued by crime, as if it's like a weather event, humidity. No, it's people behaving poorly. They're responsible for their behavior. Good example is, well, you mentioned Chicago. The mayor there is, Brandon Johnson, is even goofier than the previous mayor, Lori Lightfoot. He's wackier, more radical in many ways. But he's the one that came out in response to the fact that all these retail outlets are closing in these high crime areas, and even in medium or low crime areas, because it's, again, the shoplifting is fanning out because there's no attempt to contain it, will to contain it, political will to contain it, because the objective is actually to spread it. It's anarcho-tyranny. His response was, well, we need to open up government stores.
Right, and he's
Oh,
also
sorry, they're not going to steal from government stores. And who's going to pay for it? They're going to basically, it's a way to make everyone pay for this stuff, And there's a headline that I read, I think it was over the summer, when some of these looting operations were in the headlines in Chicago, these smash and grab things, stories. And the headline was the Babylon Bee is, and this isn't too far from reality. Again, it's hard to lampoon reality now. This is, Chicago mayor warns that if local Walmart locations close, people will have fewer places to shoplift. That's really his attitude. That's what he thinks,
Sure.
But this is why people like Brandon Smith, the people who elected him. Probably a lot of white liberals did too, so they deserve what they get, and you can say. But is they simply don't have the capacity to maintain a functional modern civilization, and that
Well,
is.
I mean, they, I mean, that, I would say they certainly do, but they're not going to because they've been mistrained
They
since
certainly
birth.
haven't demonstrated it.
Yeah.
I'm
No,
just
they
being
haven't.
I'm just being empirical about
Oh,
it.
I know, but I'm just saying that. I think if
Well, nothing, it's not being required of them. That's the problem thing. There was a time when this was required, and you could call it white supremacy if you want, but you're just imposing a cultural standards, and that I think that's necessary. I don't know.
well,
Yeah,
how
so
I would argue this way. I would say, well, if like African Americans weren't really capable of having like strong middle class communities, why then did the Judeo-Masonic government go to such trouble to take them into the abyss? You know, seems
Well,
to me
because
like
you instill in them, or drill into them that they have rights and they have privilege. I mean, sorry, they have they're aggrieved, they're oppressed, and you agitate that, and there's no they have no personal responsibility, and there's an expectation of broad-based equality when simply the requisite conditions or attitudes aren't there to create anything close to equality because of the way they behave. They ain't gonna happen. I'm sorry. And who's to say material equality is not a promise? In fact, I would say material inequality is a direct result of freedom. Now, it's a question: what's the cause of the inequality? That's the issue. You know, it's privilege, or whether it's corporate welfare or subsidy, these things. But often, it's just it's a result of sheer effort, talent, intelligence, and these things. So, in the absence of coercion, you're going to get broad-based inequality in a free society. It's just, especially a society that boasts of accepting immigrants, for Pete's sake. I mean,
Course,
you can't have a court. I
and that
mean,
society would have a median achievement and happiness
well,
level.
it would have a large degree of upward
100 times
of
greater than.
individual. It would have a large degree of upward of individual upward
Yeah.
mobility. That, you know,
Well, it was
and
gonna,
you know,
that's right. And so now we
it's
can
what the
really
country used to have,
compare.
by the way. So.
Of course, you can now compare the Chicago of 1960, the racist white supremacist Chicago, with the Chicago of 2020, which is, you know, a hellhole for everyone. So what happened? How did we make such catastrophic political and cultural decisions that we ended up going exactly in the wrong direction? This is just like what's really happening on a broad scale, and it's actually reflective of this fact, is that this is just like the Great Society programs, which were designed to absolutely trash the African American culture, to make them stupider, more violent. Well, now these same philosophies have on a large scale are being, you know, just reflected in our cities. You know,
Well,
that's
I
just.
don't want to come across as cynical, but I think with
Oh.
Lyndon Johnson, I think is after he got the Civil Rights Act passed in 1964. You know what he said?
No,
It's
no.
Lyndon Johnson, so I'm quoting. It'll have these niggers voting for us forever. His words.
Yeah, he used the N-word all the time.
Yes, so did a lot of people.
He got like a third grade marshal.
And by the way, that word is a bad word. It's not a nice word to call people. It's also it's not a nice thing to be, meaning often it's applied to people who are acting poorly, the same way that white trashes or honky or whatever. The point is it's not a crime. Nevertheless, it's used as an excuse to commit violence, because every time a crime is committed and a person's caught, you know, like there's an impulse of street crime or something, the person, if it's a person of color, a black person who shoots dead a white person, he'll say, "He called me a nigger." No, he didn't. No one believes that, but it's becoming an excuse for committing violence. It's just a bad word. You know, it's not a nice
You know,
thing to say.
the most tragic thing about the word now, it's become just such a common vernacular in black people, right?
Yeah.
They use the term all the time. Now, what's really tragic about that is that what it's really reflecting is the cultural pressure to glorify all of the aspects of the N-word that were at one time seen as negative. In other words, it's like, you know, this N-word, that, and I don't like to use the term. I could explain why I don't use it. I don't use it for fear of retribution. I just use it because I do kind of respect the problem of
Well,
slavery that.
I don't like calling people names.
No, I don't. And I so anyway, but
So
the
it's
point is,
not polite, yeah, but it's not a crime.
when black people use the term for one another,
Yeah.
particularly in the rap culture and stuff, what they're doing is they're glorifying the elements of their culture which needed improvement. So in other words, rather than you know, like trying to move away from the stereotype, which was in fact have many true elements to it, right? They are glorifying it. They are ossifying it. They're like the people who use the term now constantly, you look at their vocabulary. Their vocabulary is shrinking down to, you know, fewer and fewer words every year. Look at the
Yeah.
you know, the out of wedlock births, you know, that they are this, everyone has either a baby daddy. I mean, it's just, the culture that embraces the word and uses the word is literally, I hate to say it, it's becoming the word, you see? And so they don't see it. They
Well,
see,
to the extent your vocabulary is limited, your thought is limited. And that's why they want to dumb the vocabulary because it limits the thought. And if you don't have words for concepts, it's hard for you to articulate an idea or a thought to defend yourself or to think about something in a complex, nuanced way, which our complicated world often requires, especially when it's being manipulated by constant, simplistic, dumbed-down propaganda. To see through it, you have to have a vocabulary to see through to understand, not just the grammar, like historical knowledge, understanding of things, but the language to articulate. If you don't have the language to articulate it, then you can't effectively, combat missions, think about it,
A good example of this is the transgender. I mean, the transgender, the legitimate transgender, I mean, there are a few. The most of them, I think, are, well, they're all to some extent fake. But I mean, what has happened is you've had an individual who has been toxified, cultural and physical toxification, right? Like if they're male, their sperm count is almost zero, the estrogen mimicry in their body, and then the cultural toxification, right? Now, the problem is now you have this individual who's demanding the civil rights, but they never are able to, because of the support for what they have become through the attack, the assault on, and the toxification, they never criticize that process. They never say, I'm a victim who needs help to return to biological health. Well, this is the same thing with the culture that embraces the N-word, right?
Yes.
They glorify their weaknesses, their lack of vocabulary, their lack of self-restraint, and they are not able to ever criticize the power that got them there because they're defending themselves at this point. Just like the transgender is sitting there saying, "Who are you to deny me my basic humanity?" Well, this isn't the question about the basic humanity. The question is, how'd you get here?
There's an insert again, and often, and basically, when you see, when you have blacks who are hypersensitive about race or racism, they're just mimicking their Jewish patrons, who similar thing with anti-Semitism is they'll observe that people often express a dislike or a resentment towards them based on their behavior, and it isn't what they do. Instead of altering their behavior, they just simply, in a narcissistic, solipsistic way, say, well, it's because of anti-Semitism. The same way, well, if white people or other races, particularly Asians, East Asians, South Asians like Indians, don't want to be around black people, they'll say it's racism. Well, no, it's because often people around large groupings or any significant population of black people, there's bad behavior, there's high crime, there's violence, and these things. They don't want to be around them. So you how about be a little introspective and start, oh, wait, maybe we're behaving poorly. That's the problem with that. Good example, I was watching, obviously, they have the capacity because they're human beings. They're not encouraged or required of them. Nothing right to raise their behavior. Even people with low IQ, to the extent that those measurements are meaningful, have the capacity to improve their behavior if it's required of them. And it's not. It's if poor behavior is encouraged and justified because of my racism, because of anti-Semitism, you get a lot more of it. I just saw a thing. This is a good example of this. I was watching the initial hearings on the impeachment of Joe Biden. And they had this one Congress lady, a black lady, saying, going on how this is a waste of time. And the way she's talking is she's saying, they'd be blind to the evidence, they'd be blind, talking like an idiot. She has poor vocabulary, but she's a congresswoman. Like I said, there was a time to get to Congress, you may be corrupt, but you had to at least be intelligent. That's how we've debased our democracy, if you will, our idiocracy now. But then, she just said, there's no evidence, they'd be blind. Then she started going on about Donald Trump's alleged crimes, if that was relevant to the matter, because it was an impeachment hearing on Joe Biden and the all the evidence against him and his family about corruption. Then she's followed by another congressman who is a black Republican, and he just goes point by point about the evidence regarding Joe Biden's corruption. The shell companies, the wire transfers, that basically presenting the evidence. He didn't even acknowledge his colleagues' diatribe. It was nonsense. But there was a juxtaposition of two different standards. Obviously, the black man had was living up to standards that are acceptable, in our society to be a member of Congress. He's a black Republican. He's basically he's like a, I think he's like a former military guy, former Marine or something. But there's an example of someone who is does show the capacity to do this. The problem is the his colleague, the Congresswoman, the Congress babe, that type of behavior is rewarded because they want that. The oligarchs want that moron in Congress. Same
Well,
way
yeah.
they want the 90-year-old octogenarian Joe Biden or the 90-year-old Dianne Feinstein sitting in the Senate because they're much more effective. Now, I don't know much about the other man's career. He's a Republican, whatever that's worth, but he demonstrated a far higher caliber of intelligence and just overall higher quality thinking than this babbling lady. But that's what we get, so.
Well, that certainly is a problem.
The problem is she represents more of her group than he does. He probably has a bunch of white voters. They love to vote for they
Well,
white
I
people
just
love to
gotta
vote for
say,
black Republicans.
I know a little bit about this. It's kind of a hidden world, but I know that they select these people. I know a few people who are Democrats that are donors. They're donor class because I live in an affluent area. Meet these people at parties. They have a few drinks, get them to open up a bit, and they talk about how they select. And the process of selection of people who are going to run for these offices. So the woman who was like trash talking the Biden administration, she's been handpicked.
Yes.
This she's not reflective of the African American community. She's reflective of what the oligarchs want in terms of propaganda. So this is how tragic the situation is the leaders that the black community have been handpicked by the people who are trying to destroy the community.
Wait,
Oh,
are you suggesting that our democracy, if you will, is actually an oligarchy?
my God, what a joke. That what a tragic thing. To that, I was before we started recording, I mentioned how impressed I was with the interview you did with E. Michael Jones on the Blinken Holocaust lie. This is actually very, I mean, I know it's kind of a segue, but I think this is really sort of appropriate because this goes to how our ability to think about our elected leaders has been contrived. How it's that we are been we're in an artificial world. We can't really criticize. You don't see what's in back of them. It's so hard to see. And the Holocaust is really one of the primary structures that like keeps our thinking in a particular way. E. Michael Jones actually, went to the degree of saying how dangerous it was. It isn't just controlling us, but it actually could be killing us. And he talked about Blinken, with caught in a, bald-faced Holocaust lie. And E. Michael used the expression Holocaust deniers versus Holocaust liars, I think, is how he juxtaposed it. And Blinken was just caught, wasn't it? Just absolutely, he was just talking. He created a fantasy story
Well,
for.
I think he's relaying it. I think it was given to him. Yes.
Oh, yeah, for
His
sure.
stepfather wrote a book about it, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a story that's been kind of told in different narratives. These narratives always change, but what you get with a lie, you get to, they vary a little bit. Yeah, but it's a story about Jews being liberated by black men on tanks, black Americans. So it's that way to forge or at least reinforce the black Jewish alliance that's been around since 1913, since the Lear Frank incident, ironically, when they tried to railroad a black man for the crime of a Jew. And the ire of
Yeah.
the organized Jewry was directed at the South for the better part of 50 years, which then culminated in the civil rights movement, which then the Jewish media has sort of sanctified it, so we can't question it. That's how I have to, but that's it's a story. Yeah, it's basically blacks liberating Jews from evil Nazis, who are stand-ins for now for the entire white population. So.
Yeah, so that's and it's completely fake, and it just it reinforces the idea of Europeans being the this kind of white supremacist that sort of just runs in our DNA, and we always have to be restrained from any having any kind of political representation. I mean, this of course is also reflected in the authoritarian personality where ethnocentrism and the sense of authority were defined as, for Europeans, was defined as neurotic. And they talked about how they were going to organize all of the psychological sciences against us and use the propaganda of Eros, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. But even there, I mean, the authoritarian personality was standing upon the idea of the Holocaust as kind of the, you know, a bamboozling element, if you will, so that Europeans...
Yeah, the Jewish subversion of morals and standards in society is necessary, because if they don't do it, people become fascist, and that can, be, of course, produce another Adolf Hitler. That's the justification.
Right, and so I... you know, I was going to order E. Michael's book, but you need to use eBay, and I don't have that account. So I instead found an article that E. Michael had written on the Blinken Holocaust lie. And next to it, and it was in the Ron's Un Review, next to it was a book that I had read excerpts from, but I'd never read the whole thing, by Arthur Butts, called The Hoax of the 20th Century.
Yes, that was 1976 published, I think.
Yeah, he's had some additions and changes to it, but
that was the first like book length refutation or challenge to the Holocaust narrative. I read it in PDF form, like about, I think it's maybe 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was so impressed with it, but then again, I'm thinking that's quite a claim. So I searched for any substantive refutation of his points. I could not find any. And it was that point that a paradigm of mine had collapsed.
Amazing. I went through, I was kind of coming, you know, at the Holocaust in a very skeptical way when I saw the book and read it. But I did the same thing. It was so authoritative. I said, you know, I want to see where the kinks are in this chain of logic, because obviously there has to be, you know, some kind of refutation. I really couldn't find anything. I mean, and in fact, Ron Unz, who's a Jewish guy, I think kind of one who kind of runs on the heroic side, he publicly came out about the book, which he has on his site, saying, you know, I agree with it, which I think are more or less, he said more or less, I agree with it. Well, this work, I recommend any of our listeners should check out. It's on the UNS review, and it's not, there's no paywall. You can just go there, and it's it has all of the documentation of the his position that the
he is a doctor and a professor, if credentials mean anything.
Oh yeah, sociology professor.
Not a sociologist. He's not, right. You know, gobbly. Not to say there's some, you know, reason.
No, and that's why when you read the logic and the presentation of facts, it's just extraordinary. And couple things that I'll mention that I was unaware of that are just devastating to the idea of the Holocaust. The thing that I hadn't been aware of that he documents so well is that Auschwitz. Well, first of all, let me just back up. The first claims about this industrial extermination of Jews came from Morgenthau and Rabbi Weiss, you know, who are often kind of the villains of our narratives in other areas, you know. So right off the bat, you have this question mark as well. Why are these two bringing the information to the American public?
Yeah, Henry Morgenthau was the Secretary of the Treasury.
He had the battle with state. You know, I won't go into all the details.
But he was the author of the Morgenthau Plan.
Right. Bear in mind, he's the author.
Sorry, his name was given to it. It was probably Harry Dexter White and other Jews in the French.
Well, but White was Morgenthau's, you know, avatar, and he was controlled. So Morgenthau, I think, deserves to have his name on that. The idea of genociding the German race, showing that this absolute hatred, you know, and racism that these people represent. So this is where the information is coming from. This is where the first information that's getting into the American
basically,
media.
That's the narrow portal that this entire narrative.
Very narrow portal. Yeah. Then you have the first claims are against the camps that are known in Germany, you know, like Dachau, Buchenwald. Now, over time, these claims all disappear because those camps were in areas that there could just be too much kind of observation of. And the idea that there was like a, gas chambers disguised as a shower.
Yeah, this is where the propaganda films were made, though, like with
Billy
Wilder.
They were made there, but over time, because it was ludicrous and people could see that it was just nonsensical, right? And there was no forensic evidence supporting any of this. They backed away from it fairly quickly. So by the time you have the Nuremberg trial, they're not really talking so much about the Western camps, the camps in Germany. They're talking about, the camps that were under the Soviet control, the camps, particularly like the ones in Poland, Auschwitz, Treblinka, that group of camps. This is where supposedly the industrial slaughter, because, one thing that Butz is really good at, he shows, the claims that are being made about industrial extermination, right, of Jews, specifically Jews by the Germans, have inside the claim elements of fact. But the problem is you can look at the fact of, for example, of like a gas chamber, and you can see it, well, it could be delousing to prevent typhus, or, it might be something for industrial extermination. When you start analyzing the nature of the actual chamber and, all the attributes that are surrounding the idea of industrial extermination, none of that makes any sense. You see what I mean? You don't have the evidence presentation starts to collapse when it's put under scrutiny.
Yeah, because I mean, there was delousing. I mean, I think Germans have been delousing.
But the idea that it was a delousing,
1910, yeah.
That makes perfect sense. But anyway,
well, that's what Zyklon B was, right? It was an insecticide.
Exactly right. But in Auschwitz, one of the key claims that I was aware of, and I was kind of curious as how what the meaning of it all was, is that Auschwitz went through a period where they put in many more gas chambers than the camps that are now known to have not been extermination centers, industrial extermination centers, Buchenwald and Dachau. Excuse me. So this is a question mark, and this has been presented as evidence that Auschwitz was, in fact, a death camp for.
Well, there's also a typhus epidemic.
Well, but you see, what Butz does, which I think is.
So Anne Frank died. It was typhus in Belsen. She didn't die in Auschwitz. Well, she died in Belsen
exactly,
of typhus.
Exactly right. But what he does is he says, but the idea that there's so many of these, in Auschwitz just shows that they have to have been engaged in industrial extermination. He goes, wait a second. Auschwitz is over 10 times the size of those camps. It was the largest of all of the concentration camps, if you want to use the term.
Well, because there was an industrial center.
Because it was an industrial center, it was making rubber. The point is that he goes, if you look at 40 and 41, where you know we have good mortality rates for all of these camps, for Dachau and Buchenwald, there are Red Cross and other pretty well incontrovertible information. He goes, because it was more than 10 times the size, it had more than 10 times the fatality numbers, right? So therefore, when they put in the crematoriums, they increased the crematoriums, they were just trying to bring them up to the level of being able to get rid of diseased bodies that had been infected with typhus and other contagious diseases.
Yeah, because you couldn't bury the bodies there because of the high water table.
Well, there was that, but yeah. But here's the problem with the Holocaust narrative, is that if you look at it as per capita deaths, Auschwitz's the number of crematoriums that were installed was less per capita, less, not more than camps that are known to have not been engaged in industrial extermination. So what Butz points out is that, this is an example of kind of parallel narrative constructions, where if you just accept the idea that, well, more means must mean more deaths, therefore there is more genocide, and you don't look at any of the details, then you come up to a misunderstanding. Because when you look at the other side of that and you go, well, because there another rationale that could exist for the gas chambers that were installed in Auschwitz, And you just look at side-by-side comparisons in terms of rates of numbers of fatalities, then this, it makes perfect sense that they would have put in what amounted to 46 of these crematoriums, because they had 10 times or more than 10 times the number of bodies that they had to incinerate. And this is these bodies, the bodies, incidentally, when you compare the number that we're using in that calculation, the bodies that were dying in Dachau and Buchenwald that I'm comparing to, these are known to have been just the mortality that came out of the concentration camps, of not in an industrial extermination sense. These are disease, old age, all the other maladies that can strike someone. So, excuse me. So you've got the crematoriums are like the clearest possible evidence that it wasn't an industrial extermination center, right? They would have had 100 times the number of that in the camps that were, are known to have not engaged in that practice, but instead they had less. Now, I'll just conclude this rant with one other thing. And going through it, it was really clear to me how there is collusion in terms of the Holocaust between the Allies and the Soviet Union. It's absolutely transparent when you see the Nuremberg trial and the transcripts. Because remember, the Soviets were involved in that trial. They had their.
So it wasn't 3/4 of the staff Jewish or something?
Yeah, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
But the point is, outrageous claims would be made, like concerning Treblinka, other areas where they claim there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands. Like at Treblinka, there isn't the physical space in the camp to have buried as many bodies as they claim to have been buried. There's just no way you can insert 800,000 bodies that they claim to have buried and then dug up. They also claimed and incinerated, but at one time they buried them for some reason. Anyway, there just isn't the room. Now, if the fact is, if the Soviet Union side of the equation that controlled the areas that had now become the areas identified as where the Holocaust had occurred, which were, which was in Poland and in Russia, all they had to do was dig these areas up. They could have put forensic analysts into these areas. They could have found, was the soil disturbed? Is there evidence that there ever, because you can't put 800,000 people into the ground in that small an area and not leave lots and lots of evidence. They never did it. And the defense attorneys are also in on this because they never raised the
Well,
objection.
from
They
what I
never.
understand, at Nuremberg, there's absolutely zero forensic evidence submitted, and it was all first, witness account,
Yeah, it was witness account by
testimony,
absolute.
which can be purchased or coerced. Even the Germans that testified against their colleagues and themselves, their comrades, were comes out were tortured, like the, one of the commandants at Auschwitz was tortured. Haas was, Rudolf Haas was tortured to get his testimony to spare his wife. From what I understand, is
Yeah,
you
yeah, yeah. So I mean, so the testimony is, look, the Holocaust. I would just suggest someone start with reading Buss's book. Pretty short book. Do it in a day, maybe a day and a half. At that point, it just you've got everything you need to be able to go into the public, and when someone uses the Holocaust as an intellectual ramrod to prevent thinking and thought and talk, you can call them on it. You can say, no, you're wrong. That is a propaganda event. Now, Tim, during World War II, you may be aware there was a war going on, no doubt. So there were
Lot,
lots
lot
of
of,
fatalities,
lot of people dying, a lot of
a
dying.
lot of people dying, a
Yes.
lot of diseases and things, which is why, like at Treblinka, where they actually did a little bit of digging, they were able to determine there may have been 300 people dead there at some time, right? That's a number that's completely understandable, but it has nothing to do with industrial extermination. It has nothing to do with, 100,000 people being killed by this bizarre method of gassing. And then when you go into, some of the stuff is just laughable about. And imagine the defense attorneys not raising objections to things like, well, we took the Jews into a house, we gassed them, And then we had the floor on a spring, so they would all drop into a pit where the wagons were, and then we could drive them. I mean, okay, well, it doesn't really make a lot of sense architecturally how to do that. Where is this house? What happened? Oh, it's disassembled. It's gone, really. Can you describe it in a little more detail? I mean, these are childlike fantasies that are just being created for their
feet. I mean, to construct these things, you'd have plans drawn up, architectural plans, and
there would be some way of doing it. Talk about an electrification
yes.
on a plate. They had this big metal plate. They would push people out on it. They would shoot the electricity through. It would kill them all. And then again, they would just dump them over to the side.
I thought it would just get rid of the body.
Right. I mean,
a phaser on Star Trek, right?
You're kidding me. Can we see plans for this device? You know, I mean,
well, here's the dust jacket on. I just got received the new book, Holocaust Narrative, in the mail yesterday.
Yeah.
Holocaust refers, this is what he writes in the dust jacket. Holocaust refers to being a burnt hole. Elie Wiesel writes the night that Jews were killed in flaming pits. We don't hear about that anymore, do we? The term Holocaust originated in the 1970s from an American TV series. My wife was teaching in the public schools, and a Jewish colleague who had criticized my wife for wearing a crucifix suddenly came to school wearing a badge that said, "We are all Zionists now." The Holocaust story is the creation of a series of narratives that began with the Allied and Hollywood propaganda campaigns in World War II to cover the war crimes committed by Eisenhower and the Soviet Union, including Eisenhower's Reichenlager and the firestorms engineered to burn alive entire populations of German and Japanese civilians. That's the immediate motivation for that. Of course, the subsequent motivation and just power of the Holocaust is to, again, promote that very Zionist movement that he refers to, and also Jewish power, not only in Europe and occupied Germany, but throughout the world, particularly the United States, which is right currently, the world empire, the United States is the world power. And so it's captured, it's there to capture the hearts and minds and the consciousness of all the goyim, so that they don't challenge, the agenda of organized Jewry, which we're not allowed to acknowledge or even criticize.
Right,
because of the Holocaust and all the other things mass immigration, the degeneracy we're experiencing in our culture, again, mass migration. Here's a funk, the power of it. Where is that? Is recently there was a controversy in Texas where it was a graphic novel adaptation of Anne Frank's diary. It was being read to school children, and it contained a lot of sexual material, subjects. And the teacher was fired. The book was, quote, banned, meaning kicked out of the school. It wasn't banned. The book simply wasn't put on the reading list of middle-aged school children. And this is an example, again, how degeneracy and sexual perversion, sexuality, it uses the power of the Holocaust to promote this degeneracy and demoralize and corrupt the morals of society, because now you can't question it because it's a Holocaust. The whole idea of a middle school teacher reading sexual material to students obviously wouldn't be acceptable for the vast majority, even now, of Americans. But if you put it in the context of the Holocaust, it becomes defensible, and it becomes an anti-Semitic incident when the school fires the teacher and bans the book, because it's the Holocaust. So then there's the Holocaust being used to promote pornography in society, the same way that was done way back in the 60s with the pawnbroker, by destroying the production code in Hollywood. Pawnbroker was a movie about a Holocaust survivor, and featured the bare breast in the theater, which in 1965 you couldn't do because of the production code, which was backed up by the threat of boycott primarily through the Catholic Church. But then you couldn't, when they did this, it was said you couldn't criticize the pawnbroker because it was a Holocaust film, it was anti-Semitic. And of course, the church had come out and said that it condemns all forms of anti-Semitism in 1965 with Nostra Aetate, without defining anti-Semitism. But then if you leave it up to the Jews to define anti-Semitism, then all criticism or anything that gets in their way becomes anti-Semitic. Even the opposition to sharing pornographic material or sexual material to middle-aged school children. That's the
Boy,
power of the Holocaust.
what a disaster trajectory pornography has been. I mean, if you think about, you trace from that moment where they could expose breasts, under the cover of the Holocaust, to today, where you have pornographic lifestyle openly promoted on like TikTok and Facebook. They would have individuals talking about their life as a porn star, or even just their life as a college student, right? And then you stand back from that and you think about, these are particularly sad when you see, and it's generally because it's more pornographically vivid, they have women making these declarations, these disclosures. You think about, well, do you really think that, you're in your early 20s now? Do you really think when you get into your early 40s that this lifestyle is going to give you a satisfying life? Do you really think as you approach 50, this is all going to make sense? You're giving up your ability to have family and that kind of family
Yes,
relationships, right?
because your beauty,
You're sacrificing them for sexual pleasure in a very short period of time.
your youthful beauty is there to attract a suitable mate at a given period of time. But there's a window, you call a window of opportunity for that, and the vast majority of women who squander that opportunity are left very unsatisfied and bitter and neurotic, which we see in society today.
Yeah, I mean, well, 100% of them will be, because this is how just we're biologically designed, and there isn't any avenue to sanity and satisfying life that you can take from focusing on sexual pleasure and no restraints on it. You just there is no way. When I hear these poor women who are being typically teased into like making these disclosures, or some of them not, some have TV sh or shows where they just are very open about it. And I just think, God, they're so stupid. They cannot even see that this leads to catastrophe. It's so obvious that this is what began with the pawnbroker is now in fruition, where you have just no chance now of family production, of satisfying lives. And remember that family is a component of ethnicity, which is a component of political power, of self-esteem, true self-esteem. So they have been led off a cliff.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this may be a shock, but for any young people listening, is that as you get older, sex and sexual attractions matters a lot less, as it should. You have other things. You have other things. It becomes more meaningful, and that's the mature way to look at things. There's nothing more pathetic than an older person, particularly a man, acting like a 21-year-old.
Like a 50-year-old guy trying to look younger at a singles bar
Yeah, I'm not saying you
is,
can't stay in shape, but I'm saying is you got to own your
it,
age, you
it's
know.
just, you know, it's just like, it's ludicrous.
Yes.
It just dem that that such an individual just demonstrates the how incorrect that whole trajectory. You know, you talked last week, and we were talking about the Playboy philosophy that was presented. You know, it was just sophistry that it came out in Playboy magazine. It turns out it was all Jews. It wasn't Hefner, you
Yes.
know, producing that. There was like a team in back of him. And what was the philosophy promoting? It was justifying sort of the isolation of males, particularly in just the pursuit of sexual pleasure. Why should we be restrained? You know, why, what is the, there's no real upside to any of that when right now we can achieve the sexual pleasure, and we can overcome superstition. That word was used to describe
Yes, yeah.
sexual restraint. It was superstition. Gee, do you think now, looking at what that's achieved, that maybe we could have an anti-Playboy magazine come out with some coherent,
Well, yeah, idea that controlling one's passions and appetites and having commitment to a particular woman and children is, sorry, that's superstitious.
Yeah, and of course, look at how
That's
families
superstitious.
are portrayed in the media. You know, I mean, they're the families are, you know, claustrophobic, neurotic hellholes that you know, the young person has to break free of so that he can enter into unrestrained sexual pleasure and the world of TikTok.
Well, yeah, again, which may bring some short-term exhilaration and pleasure, but leads to a very dissatisfied and bitter life.
Yeah, because the culture isn't promoting restraint, delayed gratification, which is necessary to have the best life. You have to have some control over passions in order to have the best life. That concept's never given.
Well,
Never
a society's culture, its economics,
given.
has to promote, facilitate young people getting together and forming families. If it's not doing that, it's a society that simply does not deserve to exist. In fact, it will not exist for too long if it doesn't, and because we're seeing that today.
Of course, I mean, none of the groups which are advocating or involved with that kind of sexual acquisition, sexual identity, they aren't producing any kids at all. I mean, the transgender community is the most extreme example, but the homosexuals don't. And neither do the pornographic males or the TikTok pseudo prostitutes and legitimate prostitutes. I mean, they aren't going into, they're not going to have another generation. This is the genocide. You're looking at the genocide. When you see these individuals on TikTok talking about, well, some woman is talking about, like, I was in, had this bizarre sex life, and is describing it on the internet, in public. That's the end of that genetic lineage. That individual who comes from, eons of families and of procreation. She's the last straw. That's the end of it, because the culture has led her to a point where there's no way she can participate in a family. That's how neurotic she is. So that's
Well, this is all promoted by what feminism and pornography and free love, and we can't challenge that degeneracy because it's promoted by Jews, and Jews, because of the
We need
Holocaust, you
the
can't do it because you're
authoritarian
anti-Semitic.
personality. Instead of the authoritarian personality, you got to bring out something called the pornographic personality and actually have some real scales that actually are linked into reality to show how what they think is being good is actually being destructive to themselves.
Did you see a thing talking about, of course, the Holocaust narrative? This is when narratives collide. In Canada, Parliament
Oh, yeah,
paid
they're
tribute to this guy, Yaroslav Hunk. Yaroslav Hunk, he is a was a soldier in the 14th Division of the Waffen-SS, fighting, of course, the Soviets in Ukraine during World War II. I think he was recruited by them in 1943 at the tender age of 18. He's now 98, of course. And well, he was received a standing ovation courtesy of the Canadian Parliament. Again, this is kind of funny because this is when narratives collide. Currently, right now, there's nothing more noble than fighting Russians, right? And of course, the Russians' adversaries in the Second World War were Nazis or and their allies. But this guy was brought out 98 when he was fighting the Russians in the Ukraine, fighting for what they called Ukrainian independence. Of course, the Germans weren't fighting for Ukrainian independence, but nevertheless, this is when you have, wait a second, he's in the Waffen-SS, he's a Nazi, and therefore he's one of his, he's one of historical bad guy. How can this guy be a hero? Well, this gets into the complexity of what was going on in Ukraine. Now, why would a Ukrainian want to sign up with the Nazis, the invading Germans, to fight the Russians? Well, because what's not mentioned in the context is the Jews that had orchestrated the Holodomor in the name of the Russians, the Soviets in the 1930s. So he had had an axe to grind with the Russians, which are really Jews. And so when the Nazis invaded in 1941, they were treated as liberators from the Soviets because of what had occurred in the previous decade. But we're not given this complexity, of course. Of course, this was highlighted recently, ever since the Russians invaded the Ukraine, or at least the eastern part of Ukraine, last in 2022. Because it came out that the United States and the Ukrainian government, Zelensky's government, was supporting this group called the Azov Battalion, which are supposedly are Nazis. Or, the Azov Battalion, of course, their inspiration is Stefan Bandera, who is a guy who actually the Nazis actually imprisoned because he actually was a Ukrainian nationalist and too extreme for the National Socialists. He was released in 1944 to try and create havoc for the advancing Russians as the war turned against the Germans. But the idea is again, why would a Ukrainian fight with the Waffen-SS battalions? Because they're fighting the Russians, the Soviet Union, who had orchestrated the Holodomor in the 1930s. But see, we're not given that. But nevertheless, that type of ethnic division is still being exploited by Jews today who control the U.S. State Department now in the person of Victoria
You
Nuland.
know what
They're
I
using that ethnic division to foment and stoke a war in the Ukraine to check Russia and Europe and promote NATO expansion, which is there too.
the genocide Europeans.
Yes. But it's funny, it's just when these narratives collide. It's like,
I know
wait a
it is.
second.
How do you keep it straight? But I would I was hoping that that some alert reporter would actually go down the trajectory you just did and go to the Holodomor. Because remember, the Holodomor was hidden from the US. The New York Times handled the information flow about what was going on. They had Walter Duranty, got a Pulitzer Prize for his lying. And he was saying, no, everything is fine in the Ukraine, no one's starving. Then after the fact, the New York Times says, well, we know it was wrong, but we didn't want socialism to get a bad name. This is literally how they explain the misinformation. And my point is, same thing's going on now. New York Times has to know that the body count in the Ukraine is catastrophic, that the nation is being exterminated. But instead, they give fairy tale stories, about how the Ukrainians are actually making, some progress, and that their will to fight is strong. And they give all these optimistic stories, just like they did back during the Holodomor. It's the same thing. The New York Times is repeating the crime of giving the American public a fantasy, so we don't realize that Ukraine is a site of just deliberate genocide.
Again, this is the case of the enemy and enemy is my friend. Same way the Ukrainians would fight with the Germans against the Soviets, hoping that not just that the Germans will be, I guess, friendlier occupiers, but just the fact that this is their chance to fight off their immediate oppressors. The same way that the members of the Azov Battalion might think that they'll work with the Zelensky regime, who's supported by NATO, because it's their chance to get some degree of independence from Russia. But nevertheless, you're exploiting ethnic divisions in this area. But again, when you buy into these moralistic narratives, simplistic narratives, which the Holocaust is, what World War II is, and it doesn't seem to make sense, because now if you're going to buy the simplistic moralistic tale of World War II, Allies good, Nazis bad, this doesn't make any sense, at least from, because now we're told that the U.S. the fomented war in the Ukraine by the U.S. and NATO is a moralistic battle. It's democracy versus evil Putin,
Yeah, the kimono.
Nazi, communist, whatever it is. It doesn't seem to make sense. Also, but incidentally, what's interesting is that the ADL has not spoken up against this. This man being honored by the Canadian Parliament. Canadian Parliament apologized, but I mean, can they be so historically ignorant to suggest that someone fighting for Ukrainian independence during World War II against the Russians would have to be an ally of the evil Nazi regime? Are they that stupid? I think they are, actually.
Well,
Or
some
ignorant.
are. I mean, I think, at the higher levels, they're perfectly aware of the purpose of the war is just to reduce population.
But then we have to go with the broader narrative, which is the Holocaust narrative. So again, what's interesting is that this narrative is that emerging, we kind of originally mentioned this, emerging from the Second World War and the Holocaust narrative, is this idea that any expression of ethnic nationalism, particularly on ethnic whites, Europeans, is evil. And what you had was sort of the Nuremberg regime was imposed with. Nuremberg regime is not so much laws as it is memes and a mindset and an outlook, which means anything right wing, culturally right wing, conservative is evil, and everything left wing is progressive and good. And so when you have these expressions of ethnic identity on the part of Germans or even Ukrainians, which is it being exploited, then it'll be trashed the moment the objective is achieved, or on the part of the French. Even ethnic white Americans, these things are evil. It's white supremacy. It's evil. It has to be suppressed. And you have to believe in sort of vague categories of our democracy and civil rights, which in the end of the day don't really exist either, because these are just being used to smash ethnic identity, any types of community values, which at the end of the day support what degree of ever liberal democracy you may have, because you need that, sort of call a homogeneity and cultural identity to support a society. But then the forces that are trying to, smash what remains of the United States and fight Russia and promote war in Russia, want to destroy any sense of cultural identity, national boundaries, and cultural homogeneity, and create an atomized globalistic world that can be easily ruled over, like we see in California today. And that would be,
So you have an exact trajectory from like the authoritarian personality, which of course goes all the way back to the Hungarian Soviet, all the way to 1-6, right? Mm-hmm. Where you have the artificial, construction.
And that's transmogrified into a white supremacy protest, even though there's no evidence to support that.
Exactly. See,
a bunch of baby, aging baby boomers and conservative Republicans showing up to protest what they thought was a very, very questionable election for many reasons, they're transmogrified into this white supremacy insurrection, and it's just, there's no basis in reality for it. It's a narrative, the same way that the Holocaust is a narrative with no physical evidence.
This goes right back to the Holocaust, where if you look at the stories and the Nuremberg trial, which is one thing that's interesting, they got rid of all the Nuremberg trials text. I mean, all the videos are gone. They destroyed so many of them. And I think it was done deliberately. Obviously, it was done deliberately. So that you don't see the absolute absurd fantasy, science fiction violent stories that the so-called witnesses are bringing forward. Mm-hmm. The exaggeration of what were the people of the 1-6 protesters doing is an example of the of what was going on at the Nuremberg trial, mm-hmm. where they were creating these obviously fake stories to characterize the European, the Germans, as being possessed by a kind of demonic, just heinousness and evil. They actually talk these stories about throwing the kids into the furnace and things like this.
Yeah.
All of this is nonsense. There's no defense attorney attempting to parse through the story to show, and of course, that's why you read Butts. There are many, many of the revisionists now are saying, that these stories are just so full of holes that you just can't believe any of them. But at the trial, the defense attorneys would not even respond. They would just let these stories stand. And so this is what it ends up being, is just another element of propaganda where we're told we're evil, and we're particularly evil if we try to have any democratic power, any kind of actual political power. That's when we are white supremacists. That's when we are, the F scale. That's when we are heinous fascists. They've just been able to insert this whole level of fantasy into our minds and into the media about us acting, with evilness, when in fact, they're the ones that do this stuff. Europeans really tend not to. It's not us. We just don't behave like that. It's not our really kind of, at least in the last couple hundred years, it just doesn't occur very often. Whereas if you look at the people who are, conducting things like the Holocaust narrative, or even 1-6, the fantasy there, think of the evil, right, isn't back. Think of 9-1-1, people who are creating that fake narrative, with its evil Arabs, not Gentiles, but Gentiles, but it's not Europeans. It's these Arabs that are doing that.
Yeah, the funny thing about that is
evil of the people involved in the production of the act and in the production of the fantasy, that's where the evil is.
Here's what happens is when you have sort of this portrayal of Arabs as being big bad terrorists in Hollywood, which you did get in the 90s in sort of preparation for 9/11, is that's when you have videos like organizations like CARE, they'll talk about racism against Arabs and they'll blame primarily white people like Hollywood. Oh, really? Hollywood's one of the right people? Yeah, they may have white skin, but they're not white people, right? I mean, they're
very special. Yeah. Well, this is the thing, is that white people is a great term, and it works in many ways for people who really don't see themselves as white people, And all it's meant to do is just diminish us as individuals, fracture our ethnic, memory and pride, and turn us into this clump, you know, the clump that can't defend itself because it's all, you know, the pornographic male and the single mom, and they have no way to organize themselves any longer. They don't have any criteria left, no vocabulary left to organize themselves. So this is the role of the independent media. It's the role of everyone who participates in it, and anyone who listens to any of the shows. I mean, you have to stand up, know your facts well enough to contest these things and try to get another version, you know, the real version of history into, you know, the vocabulary of people.
Yeah, understand the power of narrative in this case. And distinguish what's either, you know, what's a category of reality and a category of the mind. And these narratives are very powerful in cementing in people's imaginations, in their minds, these categories that may or may not exist in reality, and how you're being fooled. You're being led down a false path. So trailblazers like Dianne Feinstein can lead us to our destruction. So,
yeah, and that's why when you get things like Butz's book on the Holocaust, you know, you're really looking at a great intellectual treasure, you know, because here is the facts and the analysis that is the antidote to the evil fantasy that's been planted.
Well, because any criticism now of, again, of Jewish power, even acknowledgement of Jewish power and their role in things like mass immigration, legalized pornography, abortion, promoting homosexuality and degeneracy in our society. And of course, they brag about their outsized role in all these things. They deem these things as progressive. And you criticize that, you're being anti-Semitic, and any criticism of Jewish organizations in these things is tantamount to, of course, it's to another Holocaust. And that's the power of that narrative. You cannot do it because to criticize these people as a group is to be on par with Adolf Hitler, and they're, you know, of course, Adolf Hitler, the Nazis are history's ultimate baddies, and you don't want to be associated with them. That's why Hitler is always, you know, that's why Hitler now, he's been dead for the better part of 80 years, is talked about more than ever.
Yeah, he's very important politically at this point. Speaking of that, RFK Jr. is, I guess, running as an independent. What do you think is going to come out of all that?
That's interesting. An independent, so he realizes there's no hope in the Democratic Party.
Yeah, well, that's just ridiculous. So he's going to run as an independent. It's pretty well documented at this point.
Who's going to pull away from Biden's base? I mean, I'm sorry, is there a base for Biden?
Yeah, it's an electronic base.
That's what I mean. I don't know like I said, ordinarily an independent campaign hurts one of the two major parties, depending on what, you know, they're running from. Like Ross Perot hurt George H.W. Bush in 1992. Bill Clinton would have been elected if not for H. Ross Perot running. Pat Buchanan running independent, I think in 2000. So, but in this case, with rigged voting and mail-in voting and virtual voting, who knows, right? I mean, I don't know.
I think Biden will get the exact number of votes he got last time.
The same people too, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, they just push the button and now it comes. So no, but it's going to be interesting because if nothing else, he can talk about the vaccine and
stopping the war in Ukraine, which is the biggest thing, arguably.
Yeah, absolutely. The war in Ukraine right now is the point where more Europeans are being killed than anywhere else. Yes. I mean, there's the vaccine is still steadily working through us. The mortality statistics are actually worse and worse, but the greatest number is in the Ukraine, and RFK has talked reasonably about that, so I hope he, you know, can bring some sense to the American people. We sure do need it.
Okay, Joe.
Tim, thanks for the discussion, brother, and we will talk next week, okay?
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.